Well, let's go ahead and get back into the Word, which we do day by day. We're going to turn our attention back to 1 Samuel chapter 18 and the follow-up to the event of David killing Goliath. Now remember, he was a kid. He was probably only about 13 years of age when this happened. But he showed great faith in God, great trust in God. That's why it occurred. And this impressed Prince Jonathan, who is about 10 or so years older than him. Jonathan has got to be right around his mid-20s. And Jonathan is also a man after God's own heart. Just a couple of years earlier, he was the hero of a battle because, as he said, God can save by few just as easily as he can save by many. So he sees this victory carried out by David in the name of God, something which he didn't even volunteer for. And he decides that David is someone he should be tightly associated with. 1 Samuel 18:1. As soon as he had finished speaking to Saul, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. He starts thinking of him, I think, as a little brother. And he begins to treat him as someone special in his life. Now, don't get taken in by this foolishness that is out there trying to make this into some sort of sexual relationship, because it wasn't. This is a godly friendship. And so, the next thing we read, verse 2, is Saul took him that day and would not let him return to his father's house. So up to this point, David had been bouncing back and forth between the palace at Gibeah, where he played music whenever Saul needed that, and the rest of the time he was acting as Saul's attendant, his armor bearer. But whenever Saul was out to war maneuvers or something like that, David went back to Bethlehem and took care of the sheep. That's not going to happen anymore, because David has shown himself to be a warrior ahead of his time. That is, ahead of the typical age when a person went into the military. So he's going to start receiving even more training and direction when it comes to fighting. And Jonathan is going to be the one that does that, I think. But he's not going to go home to Bethlehem anymore. Verse number 3. Then Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as his own soul. So they swear to watch out for each other. And there's more details of that that come out later. Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was on him. That would be a royal robe. And gave it to David, and his armor, and even his sword and his bow and his belt. So Jonathan outfits David for his new role as a member of Saul's military. And he's going to make sure he's got the best equipment, the best armor, and he'll make sure it fits properly as well. Verse 5, David went out and was successful wherever Saul sent him. And that's kind of a getting ahead of the story. Saul will make David a commander later. But right now, he is just going to be learning, I think, from Prince Jonathan. So that Saul set him over the men of war. And this was good in the sight of all the people and also in the sight of Saul's servants. So everyone's excited about the victory that David has given to the Israelites because of his faith in God and the death of Goliath, but also that David is going to now be joining the military and moving up through the ranks as a leader of men, even though he's still a teenager. Verse number 6. As they were coming home, when David returned from striking down the Philistine. So now the Israeli military is going to go back to Gibeah, back to the current capital of the United Tribes of Israel. This is the hometown of Saul, and it's where they would have mustered from at the beginning of this response to the Philistine invasion. So they're going to make their way back. It's a good day's walk. And along the way, the word has spread about this great victory and who is responsible for it. And they start composing songs of victory. They would usually have songs of victory anyway, but this particular song of victory becomes problematic. It says the women came out of all the cities of Israel singing and dancing to meet King Saul with tambourines, with songs of joy, and with musical instruments. And the women sang to one another as they celebrated, "Saul has slain his thousands and David his tens of thousands." Now, that, of course, is attributing to David all of the Philistine deaths that occurred in this battle, because he's the one that started it by killing Goliath. So he gets the big assist record for all of the tens of thousands of Philistines that died in their retreat back out of the Valley of Elah to Eglon and Gath. And of course, you know, this is not going to go over well with King Saul. Verse 8, Saul was very angry, and this saying displeased him. He said, "They've ascribed to David tens of thousands. To me, they've ascribed thousands. What more can he have but the kingdom?" So Saul has been the king of Israel for about 2, maybe 3 years at this point, I believe. And he has been involved in several battles, a lot of fighting, and he's killed a lot of Ammonites and a lot of Philistines. And he's been loved by the people of Israel because of that. But now he's being eclipsed by this kid, and he's being given even more credit than the king himself. And so Saul begins to envy David and see him as a threat. Verse 9, Saul eyed David from that day on. Now we can't prove it, but it is possible that Saul began thinking that perhaps David was the new king that Samuel had told him about. Remember the last time that he and Samuel talked? Samuel told him, God has selected someone better than you to be king because he's rejected you for being king. So Saul is aware prophetically, because of Samuel, that there's somebody out there that God's already tapped, God's already got in mind to replace him. No timetable on it. But it is possible that when he looks at David, he might start suspecting he's the guy. And this puts him and David at odds. Now, David's not angry at Saul. David kind of grew up with Saul being the hero king of Israel. David was about 10, I think, when Saul became the king of Israel, and would have heard about all of the victories against the Ammonites and against the Philistines that took place in those first couple of years, because his brothers, three of them, seem to have been in those battles, or at least some of those battles. So David doesn't have a problem with Saul. Saul has a problem with David. All right, verse number 10. The next day, meaning the day after they arrived back at Gibeah. A harmful spirit from God rushed upon Saul, and he raved within his house while David was playing the lyre, as he did day by day. So here is King Saul, who's already irritated by the songs that are being sung, and the demonic spirit comes and starts to hassle him, starts to cause him to be even more envious of David and troubled by whatever events this spirit wants Saul to be unsettled by. And Saul begins getting crazy in the midst of all this, like he often does. And that's why David is on staff and has been for several months now, to come in and play prophetically, play with inspiration his musical instrument and sing the songs of God to make this spirit go away. But there's a lot of spiritual warfare going on here, and the spirit doesn't go away so easily this time. And Saul is going on and on about this, that, and the other thing. When it says here that he was raving within his house, it's actually the word for prophesying. So the spirit, this demonic force, was apparently speaking through him. And then this is what we read next. Saul had his spear in his hand. And Saul hurled the spear, for he thought, I will pin David to the wall. But David evaded him twice. So this is the first time that King Saul tries to murder or assassinate young David. He doesn't get it done, because the Holy Spirit of God is involved in the situation. And we know what the New Testament says. Greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. So when it comes down to a contest between God and a demonic spirit, God's going to get it pulled out. So David is able to evade in a supernatural way the attempt on his life. And David probably just chalks it up to the fact that that's what happens when a demonic spirit is taking control of Saul. He tries to hurt people all around him. And so David doesn't leave Saul's service at this time. He sticks around. Verse 12, Saul was afraid of David because he who is was with him, but had departed from Saul. And we know that's the whole story behind the demonic spirit. When Saul was emptied of God's immediate presence in his life, that's when the demonic spirit came into that vacuum and started causing all this trouble. So he is being kept in a state of agitation and frustration and anger and fear about David because of this demonic spirit. One of the things that Saul decides to do is this, verse 13. So Saul removed him from his presence and made him a commander of 1,000. And he went out and he came in before the people. Now, we are in a place now in this story that we're going to go over several years worth of events in a short period of time. And it becomes difficult for us to know exactly when some of these things took place in that framework. Because coming up not too far away from us in this text are events that take place in the 18th year of King Saul, when David was 28 years of age. Now, at the current time that we've been talking about, David was only about 13, and it was about the second or third, probably third year of King Saul's kingdom. So we've got all that time in between that we're now going to go over in this section of scripture. So at some point, Saul comes to the conclusion, I don't trust having David anywhere near me. And I don't want him taking care of my armor. I don't want him taking care of my weaponry. I want him out on the field. So he puts David out in active combat roles. And he even sticks him in charge of some of these combat units, which more than likely did cause some irritation among the military members. Because keep in mind, the military is a very structured group. There's a ranking structure, and it has to do with your experience and your time in service and things of that nature. And so a lot of these guys that should have been moving up into positions faster than David are now getting jumped over by David. David's being promoted ahead of his time and being put in charge of units that should have gone to somebody else's care. And so there's going to be some jealousy coming up from the bottom, and that really does come out in later stories when David is writing psalms about people that lie about him. So David is going out and coming in before the people. So that's a description of how he is becoming more and more impressive in his activities as a military member, even though he's still a teenager at this point. Verse 14. David had success in all his undertakings, for he who is was with him. And when Saul saw that he had great success, he stood in fearful awe of him. And part of that is because his plan was more than likely to get David killed on the field of battle. You know, stick the kid out in the hottest fights, expect a whole bunch out of him, put him in charge of a unit without any experience on his part, and somehow he's probably going to get himself killed, either by the enemy or his own men are going to frag him. Well, it doesn't happen that way. God blesses him. God trains his fingers for war. That's something that comes up in one of his psalms later, and gives him great success. And Saul is scared even more by that. Verse 16, but all Israel and Judah loved David, for he went out and came in before him. Now, verse 17 more than likely comes up right around David's later teen years, because this would be the time that David would be of marriageable age. Now, there was a promise made to him much earlier, and that was whoever kills the giant Goliath gets to marry the princess Merab. So David is now old enough for that to happen. And so here is Saul following through with his promise. Verse 17. Saul said to David, "Here is my elder daughter Merab. I will give her to you for a wife. Only be valiant for me and fight he who is his battles." For Saul thought, "Let not my hand be against him, but let the hand of the Philistines be against him." So that goes with everything I was talking about. He wants David to get into the hottest fights, to always be in the front line conflicts, because he hopes David will get killed. So when he offers, in completion of his promise, Princess Merab as David's wife, he reminds David, you've got to always take on the hot spots in warfare because I want you to be valiant as my son-in-law. But he's not really wanting him to be valiant, he wants him dead. Verse 18, David said to Saul, "Who am I? Who are my relatives, my father's clan in Israel, that I should be son-in-law to the king?" But at that time, when Merab, Saul's daughter, should have been given to David, she was given to Adriel the Meholathite for a wife. So David effectively declines being married to Princess Mirab, who was probably a little bit older than him, because remember, when she was first offered as wife, it was to a bunch of soldiers that were probably in their 20s. And she more than likely was probably in her upper teens. So she's probably in her 20s now, and David's probably 17, 18. So age-wise, there was a difference. So he declines out of modesty as well. He doesn't see himself worthy to become the son-in-law of the king. So Saul goes ahead and marries off Mirab to someone else, to another one of his soldiers. But then he finds something out. Verse 20. Now Saul's daughter Michal loved David. Now, more than likely, Michal and David are much closer to the same age. And she is smitten by David as the hero of Israel. And she sees him on a regular basis, because remember, she's the princess. She lives in the palace. David has been in and out of the palace quite a bit. And even after Saul took him into more active military service, David still had to come back and report on a regular basis at the palace. So Michal falls in love with David. And this information gets back to Saul. It says they told Saul, and the thing pleased him. Saul thought, let me give her to him that she may be a snare for him and that the hand of the Philistines may be against him. Now, don't overthink this. It's not that Michal is a bad girl that Saul is hoping will cause David trouble. I've seen that in some commentaries. It's the idea that offering David a second chance to become his son-in-law through Michal will open up the opportunity to get David killed again. Because this time he's going to ask for a dowry. So this time Saul said to David a second time, "You shall now be my son-in-law." And Saul commanded his servants, "Speak to David in private and say, 'Behold, the king has delight in you. All his servants love you. Now then, become the king's son-in-law.'" So he puts this pressure on David. He has this campaign of everybody around David telling David, "Saul wants you to be his son-in-law. His daughter's in love with you. Wouldn't it be great to be married into the family?" And so Saul's servants spoke these words into the ears of David, and David said, "Does it seem to you a little thing to become the king's son-in-law since I'm a poor man and have no reputation?" So David expresses the problem is, I don't think I can pay the proper dowry. And that's where we'll have to break off today, and we'll bring ourselves back to this story next time we get into God's Word.